Chapter 3. Norman Mushari learned that, on the night of Aida, Elliot disappeared again, jumped out of his homeward-bound cab at 42nd Street and 5th Avenue. 10 days later, Sylvia got this letter, which was written on the stationery of the Elsinore Volunteer Fire Department, Elsinore, California. The name of the place set him off on a new line of speculation about himself, to the effect that he was a lot like Shakespeare's Hamlet. Dear Ophelia, Elsinore isn't quite what I expected, or maybe there's more than one, and I've come to the wrong one. The high school football players here call themselves the Fighting Danes. In the surrounding towns, they're known as the Melancholy Danes. In the past 3 years, they have won one game, tied 2, and lost 24. That's what happens, I guess, when Hamlet goes in as quarterback. The last thing you said to me before I got out of the taxi cab was that maybe we should get a divorce. I did not realize that life had become that uncomfortable for you. I do realize that I am a very slow realizer. I still find it hard to realize that I am an alcoholic, though even strangers know this right away. Maybe I flatter myself when I think that I have things in common with Hamlet, that I have an important mission, that I'm temporarily mixed up about how it should be done. Hamlet had one big edge on me. His father's ghost told him exactly what he had to do, while I am operating without instructions. But from somewhere, something is trying to tell me where to go, what to do there, and why to do it. Don't worry, I don't hear voices, but there is this feeling that I have a destiny far away from the shallow and preposterous posing that is our life in New York. And I roam. And I roam. Young Mushari was disappointed to read that Elliot did not hear voices, but the letter did end on a definitely cracked note. Elliot described the fire apparatus of Elsinore, as though Sylvia would be avid for such details. They paint their fire engines here with orange and black stripes, like tigers, very striking. They use detergent in their water so that the water will soak right through wallboard to get it afire. That certainly makes good sense, provided it doesn't harm the pumps and hoses. They haven't been using it long enough to really know. I told them they should write the pump manufacturer and tell him what they're doing, and they said they would. They think I am a very big volunteer fireman from back east. They are wonderful people. They aren't like the sparrow farts and dancing masters who come tapping at the Rosewater Foundation's door. They're like the Americans I knew in the war. Be patient, Ophelia. Love, Hamlet. Elliot went from Elsinore to Vashti, Texas, and was soon arrested. He wandered up to the Vashti firehouse, covered with dust, needing a shave. He started talking to some idlers there about how the government ought to divide up the wealth of the country equally, instead of some people having more than they could ever use and others having nothing. He rambled on, said such things as, "You know, I think the main purpose of the Army, Navy, and Marine Corps is to get poor Americans into clean, pressed, unpatched clothes, so rich Americans can stand to look at them." He mentioned a revolution, too. He thought there might be one in about 20 years, and he thought it would be a good one, provided infantry veterans and volunteer firemen led it. He was thrown in jail as a suspicious character. They let him go after a mystifying series of questions and answers. They made him promise never to come back to Vashti again. A week after that, he turned up in New Vienna, Iowa. He wrote another letter to Sylvia on the stationery of the fire department there. He called Sylvia the most patient woman in the world, and he told her that her long vigil was almost over. "I know now," he wrote, "where I must go. I am going there with all possible speed. I will telephone from there. Perhaps I'll stay there forever. It isn't clear to me yet what I must do when I get there, but that will become clear too, I'm sure. The scales are falling from my eyes. Incidentally, I told the fire department here that they might try putting detergent in their water, but that they should write the pump manufacturer first. They like the idea. They're going to bring it up at the next meeting. I've gone 16 hours without a drink. I don't miss the poison at all. Cheers." When Sylvia got that letter, she immediately had a recording device attached to her telephone, another nice break for Norman Mushari. Sylvia did this because she thought that Elliot had at last gone irrevocably bananas. When he called, she wanted to record every clue as to his whereabouts and condition so that she could have him picked up. The call came.
Ophelia?
Oh, Elliot. Elliot, where are you, darling?
In America, among the rickety sons and grandsons of the pioneers.
But where? But where?
Absolutely anywhere. In an aluminum and glass phone booth in a drab little American anywhere, with American nickels, dimes, and quarters scattered on the little gray shelf before me. There is a message written with a ballpoint pen on the little gray shelf.
And what does it say?
Sheila Taylor is a cockteaser. I'm sure it's true.
There was an arrogant blat from Elliot's end.
Hark, said Elliot. A Greyhound bus has blatted its Roman trumpets flatulently outside the bus depot, which is also a candy store. Lo, one old American responds, comes tottering out. There is no one to bid him farewell, nor does he look up and down the street for someone to wish him well. He carries a brown paper parcel tied with twine. He is going somewhere, no doubt to die. He is taking leave of the only town he's ever known, the only life he's ever known, but he isn't thinking about saying goodbye to his universe. His whole being is intent on not offending the mighty bus driver, who looks down fumingly from his blue leather throne. Whoops! Too bad! The old American crawled aboard in fair shape, but now he can't find his ticket. He finds it at last. Too late. Too late. The driver is filled with rage. He slams the door, starts off with a savage clashing of gears, blows his horn at an old American woman crossing the street, rattles the window panes. Hate, hate, hate.
Elliot? Is there a river there?
My telephone booth is in the broad valley of an open sewer called the Ohio. The Ohio is 30 miles to the south. Carp as big as atomic submarines fatten on the sludge of the sons and grandsons of the pioneers. Beyond the river lie the once green hills of Kentucky, the promised land of Dan'l Boone, now gulched and gashed by strip mines, some of which are owned by a charitable and cultural foundation endowed by an interesting old American family named Rosewater. On that side of the river, the Rosewater Foundation's holdings are somewhat diffuse. On this side, though, right around my phone booth, for a distance of about 15 miles in any direction you care to go, the foundation owns almost everything. The foundation, however, has left the booming nightcrawler business wide open. Signs on every home proclaim nightcrawlers for sale. The key industry here, hogs and nightcrawlers aside, is the making of saws. The saw factory is owned by the foundation, of course, because saws are so important here. The athletes of Noah Rosewater Memorial High School are known as the Fighting Sawmakers. Actually, there aren't many sawmakers left. The saw factory is almost fully automatic now. If you can work a pinball machine, you can run the factory, make 12,000 saws a day. A young man, a fighting sawmaker about 18 years old, is strolling insouciantly past my phone booth now, wearing the sacred blue and white. He looks dangerous, but he wouldn't harm a soul. His two best subjects in school were citizenship and problems in modern American democracy, both taught by his basketball coach. He understands that anything violent he might do would not only weaken the Republic, but would ruin his own life, too. There is no work for him in Rosewater. There is damn little work for him anywhere. He often carries birth control devices in his pocket, which many people find alarming and disgusting. The same people find it alarming and disgusting that the boy's father did not use birth control devices. One more kid rotten spoiled by post-war abundance. One more princeling with gooseberry eyes. He's meeting his girl now. A girl not much older than 14. A 5- and 10-cent store Cleopatra. A 4-letter word. Across the street is the firehouse. 4 trucks, 3 drunks, 16 dogs, and 1 cheerful, sober young man with a can of metal polish.
Oh, Elliot, Elliot, come home. Come home.
Don't you understand, Sylvia? I am home. I know now that this has always been home. The town of Rosewater, the township of Rosewater, the county of Rosewater, the state of Indiana.
And what do you intend to do there, Elliot?
I'm going to care about these people.
That's very nice, said Sylvia bleakly. This was a pale and delicate girl, cultivated, wispy. She played the harpsichord, spoke 6 languages enchantingly.
As a child and young woman, she had met many of the greatest men of her time in her parents' home. Picasso, Schweitzer, Hemingway, Toscanini, Churchill, de Gaulle. She had never seen Rosewater County, had no idea what a nightcrawler was, did not know that land anywhere could be so deathly flat, that people anywhere could be so deathly dull.
I look at these people, these Americans, Elliot went on, and I realize that they can't even care about themselves anymore, because they have no use. The factory, the farms, the mines across the river, they're almost completely automatic now. And America doesn't even need these people for war. Not anymore, Sylvia. I'm going to be an artist.
An artist?
I'm going to love these discarded Americans, even though they're useless and unattractive. That is going to be my work of art.